Welcome to Let's Talk Sales, the podcast that's all things sales and business development. This podcast series is for CEOs that are looking to build strong companies, sales VPs and sales managers that want to take things to the next level, and salespeople that are looking to improve. This podcast is brought to you by Calavia, the sales playbook platform made for your team by your team. The Calavia Sales Playbook houses your company's best practices, templates, and processes, and it also functions as an online sales training academy for your existing sales team and for any new hires. Learn more at calavia.com. That's C-O-L-L-A-V-I-A.com. Today's podcast is part of our Q&A series where we respond to questions from you, our audience. I really love this segment. It's so refreshing to hear from you and really uncover the biggest problems that you're facing as a sales leader. And of course, to have the opportunity for us to address those problems is really awesome. So thank you to our audience. You guys are amazing. You're the reason we do this, and your feedback and comments mean the world to us. So thank you for listening and for participating in this Q&A. With that said, let's jump into some intros. This is Rebecca Smith, and today I'm here with our CEO, Charles Bernard.
Hello.
Charles, are you as excited as I am about today's Q&A on personal development?
Working with you is nothing but exciting. I'm always excited. And I'm particularly excited about this podcast because you do such a great job, Rebecca. And Aww. How can I not be excited?
Well, thank you. And we're talking about this month's theme, which again is personal development, personal growth. It's something that we all think about, but it seems that a lot of people struggle in this area. So I wanted to start with a little bit of context at the beginning of the today show. When I say personal development, I'm really referring to activities or thoughts from a personal or professional perspective that help us to grow and develop as human beings. So anything related to being better at our jobs or better human beings. Is there anything that you want to add to this, Charles?
No, I totally agree with you. I think happy, better employees contribute more and enjoy their job. And it's a circle, you know, if they're happy, they enjoy their jobs, they're likely to be more productive.
So true. Definitely. So we'll go ahead and start by moving into our audience questions about personal development, some of the comments and some of the struggles that were out there. We surveyed and people had a lot of pain in this area. So this is going to be a really exciting conversation to kind of learn what we can do to improve and get that personal development time in to really grow and improve. So I can't wait to get started. So I'm going to start with the biggest frustration that we came across from our audience. Now, this is something that multiple people had expressed, but one person in particular, Ryan P., he really made me laugh. He said his biggest struggle was finding the time to focus on personal development for more than 2 minutes. And really, how true is that? It's so easy to get distracted or, you know, we've got a lot on our plates, but really more than 2 minutes, I don't even have 2 free minutes most days. So I get it. So Charles, what advice can you share for those listening that want to focus on personal development but struggle to find the time?
Wow, that's a great question. Let me think about that for a second. So I have remembered something a trainer told me many, many years ago, and it stuck with me. And he said, we rush to the urgent at the expense of the important. I think that's a pretty common phrase now. Mm-hmm. You hear it a lot, but it's very true. And I think we're oftentimes unaware that we're caught up in busy work and we get addicted to busy work. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like that hamster wheel, we're kind of like, you know, working and thinking we're accomplishing something at the expense of really taking perhaps a bigger picture view of what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing. So I think number one, starting with some recognition on where you're spending your time, and is it really busy work, and can you block out time for yourself either to recharge and do something that will generate energy? You know, we've in the dot-com era, that's where it all started. We would have companies with lounge chairs and foosball tables and ping pong tables, and the ability to do recreational activities. And I still see a lot of that going on. But I'm talking kind of a little bit bigger than that in terms of finding the time, whether it's in the current day that you have, your work day, or whether it's something you're going to do in the evening. I think you got to kind of put some limits on work and how I think you do that. So that's all philosophical, right? So I'll get to the how. And I actually learned this from you, Rebecca, because you were someone who's really big on this. And you've mentioned this a number of times, time blocking.
Mm. Yeah.
If you put stuff in your calendar and the focus on some of these blocks of time are for you and your personal development, and whether that's recreational or whether that's professional, that's really up to you. But I think just putting time in your calendar is probably the best place to start after you've recognized that perhaps you're spending too much time on something that seems to be accomplishing something but really isn't moving you forward on a personal level, if that makes any sense.
Oh, definitely. And yeah, of course, you know, and I'm sure most of our audience knows by now that I'm a big proponent of time blocking, always talking about it. And I will throw the ebook that includes templates on how to time block and explains how to use your calendar effectively. I'll throw that in the show notes, and you can find that at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod. What episode is this, Charles?
Personal development. I don't know what the number is, though.
We are on episode 43. Can 43. You believe it?
Wow.
So pod 43, criteriaforsuccess.com/pod43. I can't even believe
already.
It.
How many subscribers do we have? Do you know?
Just a few. No, I'm just
no,
messing.
I think we're in the thousands at this
yeah, we're
point.
We've got a lot of people listening in. It's really exciting. So yeah. I hope that they can take this one to heart. So when it comes to time, the response here is focus on your time block. Look at your time block. See how you're using your time. See where you can carve out that 30 minutes to use for personal development. And depending on what it is that you want to do, let's say you want to spend your time watching online videos or reading specific ebooks or doing research online, whatever the case may be, make sure that you notate what it is you're going to be doing and when. The more specific you can be, the more opportunity you'll have to actually accomplish that task, right?
Well, I'll add one more thing, and this is something that I talk about when I'm doing some time management training. So we time block, like you were just talking about. The thing that I find is important is if you've blocked out a chunk of time, 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever the time is, not make it task-oriented, but more accomplished-oriented.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. So in other
idea.
Words, in that two-hour time block, what is it that I want to get as opposed to what is it that I want to do?
What are you accomplishing?
Right? I learned something. Mm-hmm. I got an insight. I moved my racquetball skills forward. I'm a big racquetball player. I also love to scuba dive. So actually, I'm going in July with friends to Bonaire. That's
Woo-hoo.
For those of you who are scuba divers, that's shore diving. You're not on a boat. You literally start at the shore and you just walk out and in you go and you sink at whatever level you sink and you scuba dive. But there's a lot of skill involved. And I just didn't realize until I'm saying it now that this is very relevant to this podcast, that for the last few weeks, I've been getting on YouTube in the mornings and in the evenings, and just I haven't formally blocked out a time, but I think now I will because I really do want to learn some skills. And there's a lot more to scuba diving than a lot of people who haven't scuba dived think, like buoyancy and using your equipment correctly and making sure that you decompress and all these other technical terms that are important and in many cases life-saving. So that's something that I think is really important to figure out what is it that you want to get from the time that you're spending on personal development.
Yeah. Do you have to practice swimming to get ready for this?
Well, it's very important that you can swim.
It's been winter here for the last, it seems like forever. So I have a feeling you probably haven't been in the water too much. But
No. Swimming pool. I have a pool in my building. I'm very fortunate. I always tell people I have a teeny tiny apartment. I pay the price in lack of space, but I also reap the benefits of having a pool and a sauna and a great gym in my building. So it's an elevator ride away.
There you go. a give and a take. And now I think when it comes from a professional perspective, kind of what I took from what you said before, when you said go into it with a goal in mind. So let's say that your intention is to develop professionally. You're a sales manager, you're a CEO, you're a salesperson, business developer, and you want to get better at your job. So you decide that every day, the first thing that you do when you get into the office or on your commute for a half an hour, you're going to read up on, you know, articles. Let's say they're from Inc. or from Forbes or whatever. If you want to take something actionable out of that, I would say take notes on it and write a blog article about it. Write an article for LinkedIn.
Yeah.
We all need content, right, for our LinkedIn profiles and to post as articles on LinkedIn. So that's a great way to kind of just take what you've learned and just debrief it and say, you know, here's what I took out of this article, just as an idea.
I love that. And I find we do that here at CFS. We often use blogging as a mechanism to create new thoughts and new ideas for training.
Definitely.
Something we learned and observed. But until you start writing about it and getting to that level of detail, you might be missing some things. And so you can fill in the blanks in a blog article. That's really cool.
You know, I know that you do that a lot, Charles, where you'll go to a training, you'll either be giving a training, you'll go to an event, and you'll come back and you'll be like, oh man, that was so great. I learned this, I learned this, I learned this. And then you write about it. Not only does that kind of solidify for you what you've learned, but now you're also providing value to other people because you're sharing your findings.
Yeah, sharing is learning. Learning is sharing.
Very cool. So let's continue on this path. I've got a three-part question for you based on Mark W.'s comment. So the question was, what can listeners do to A, stop putting off personal development, B, stay focused on it, and C, occasionally stop to make sure they're actually focused on the right things?
Well, I'll give you a quick and simple answer. And then if you want me to expand on it, I can. But I think the easiest and simplest answer I can give you is find a buddy or a coach.
There you go.
Who will help you. And, you know, a lot of people get hung up on this word, but I'm going to use it anyway. Help you be accountable and accountability. And I think a lot of people confuse accountability with some authoritarian thing that I've got over you. That's not what I mean. It's really having someone outside of you who can give back to you the same level of commitment that you want from yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And so you do that to me. Like, you know, I'll ask you to check in with me on a deliverable, or you tell me, we got this calendar, back to the blogging where I'm on the calendar, blah, blah. And I never feel harassed when you remind me, because I know I'm getting something valuable out of it. And I opted in the first place to be part of the blogging team here at CFS. So I think having a buddy and having someone who can check in with you and just make sure that you're not putting off personal development, that you're staying focused on it. And I think in terms of occasionally stopping to make sure you're actually focused on the right things, you know, something, again, I like to learn from others and then give that information away. I learned from somebody else, Joe Applebaum, actually.
Oh, nice.
I always had a sort of beginning of day process, but he reminded me of an end of day process. Mm-hmm. And the end of day process is really checking in with what you've accomplished for the day. And in this time that you've blocked aside, maybe it's 15 minutes, it might be a great way to check in to make sure you haven't stopped on being focused on the right things. And then the last thing, the kicker, this is the thing I love that he said, to reflect on what you're grateful for. Mm-hmm. You know, and that could be in the form of something someone did to you, as well as what you're grateful for, that you made a contribution to others. So just having that little thing at the end of the day, you could do it weekly, you don't have to do it every day, but some way to check in with yourself and make it more of a official thing. Perhaps you have a note or an index card, or it's even in your calendar to go through something like that on a recurring basis. I don't know. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I'm so glad that you brought up a little bit towards the beginning there about accountability, because we were talking about that this morning and how a lot of times people think that when there are accountability partners, that it means the other person is responsible for you. And that is what we were saying is really not true. If you have an accountability partner, you're accountable for yourself. Having the partner is motivation to stay accountable to that person. But you know, it actually reminds me, I'll give you a quick example, Charles. So last night, my mom has been helping me with some projects, some printing projects. She works in the printing world. And so I was working on something last night. I finished one thing and I was about to move to the next, and we were on the phone, and she said, "When are you going to get me the next one?" And I said, "I'll get it to you tonight. I promise." And as soon as I said, "I promise," that meant that I had to hold myself responsible and accountable for getting that done because I said that. And then, of course, a little while later, I'm kind of falling asleep on the couch and I'm like, "I said, I promise. I have to do this. I have to hold myself accountable."
Yeah.
And you know, okay, so if I didn't do it, what would happen? She would immediately text or call the next morning and say, where is it? What happened? You know, so I got it done, sent it over to her. But it's just kind of an example of, she's not responsible for me getting something done. I am responsible for myself. I'm accountable to myself. So just kind of something to keep in mind for salespeople that are working to coach each other and be accountable to each other. And even coaches and sales managers holding salespeople accountable, it comes from you first.
No, we're big on promises around here. So I really like that example because you didn't have to promise.
I didn't. I really probably shouldn't, but you know, I did.
You could have said, "Hey, Mom, I'll get it to you as soon as I can," et cetera. But by promising, it put some teeth behind it.
It did.
Right?
You know,
held you accountable.
It pushed me. It actually motivated me because it was something that, you know, I could have put it off for another day. And then I would have been stressing out about it for another day. So yeah. I said, "You know what? I'll get it to you. I promise."
Well, now I'm held accountable. There's been studies on this. Like they say that people who use the word promise or imply a promise are, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's pretty high, like 80%, something like that, more likely to accomplish what it is they said they would because they use that word or that approach.
It's a strong word.
It's a speech act.
All right. Now, what about those who have too many goals? What can they do? Sean D, he shared that he finds himself having too many goals to properly focus on just one. And this goes back to what we were talking about before with time, but I think this question is more about prioritizing than anything. Do you have any prioritization tips?
Well, I was just speaking to some CEOs. I gave a talk, the organization's Vistage. I'm a Vistage speaker. And for anyone listening, check it out, vistage.com. If you're an aspiring CEO or if you're a CEO who wants to get to the next level, it's a great organization, provides a lot of support. Yeah. Anyway, long story short, you get speakers like me coming in and talking about our topics. Mine is sales. And within sales, I talk about time management and setting goals, which I think, to your point earlier, is very important for salespeople. And I think there is this tendency to create these monster to-do lists that are not grounded in reality. And I think one way to answer this question from Sean is to do kind of like a reality check by checking your calendar. Like if you've got a bunch of goals you want done for the week and you want to make sure that they get done, look at what your calendar looks like. If you've got like maybe 3 hours left because the rest of your time for the week is blocked out for meetings and other things and you've got a list of 500 goals, it's very unlikely you're going to get it done because you've got to allocate time to some of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I think a calendar check is number one. And then my favorite, the one that I find, it's back to that hamster wheel analogy I was using earlier, is just check yourself on emergencies. Mm. Because a lot of people, especially salespeople, jump into firefighting, resolving client problems, running around, taking care of, quote, emergencies, what mm-hmm. they think are emergencies. And I define an emergency as something you have to stop dead in your tracks, stop what you were doing, and handle this, quote, emergency, unquote. And someone, again, I'm a learner and I love to hear from other people, said that a study was done where they determined that 25% of what you and I say are emergencies are real emergencies, like a blazing fire you got to take care of. And the rest of the time, we kind of rush to put out these fires that maybe not even are fires, and mm-hmm. there's not even any smoke. It's kind of like, I'll give you a classic example. You'll get this right away. You're busy doing something and you get the bing on your computer and an email's come in. Mm-hmm. You look at the email and you go, oh, I got to respond right away, take care of this. Yep. And all of a sudden a half hour goes by because you're responding to this email, which takes you down some rabbit trail. And all of a sudden you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think what you got to watch out for those emergencies. They creep up on you.
And perhaps putting in time blocks for email specifically, yeah. That sometimes helps. I know that I definitely fall into that where yeah. I'll be in the middle of doing something and I get this email pop up and, oh, I've been waiting for this. But then now I'm out of my time block. I'm mm-hmm. out of what I was doing. And it's not always a good thing to be jumping back and forth. You yeah. lose a little bit of productivity, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't advocate one way or the other. So I think I know like Elizabeth who works here, she's very regimented about when she looks at emails.
She is. And she's genius at it too. Inbox zero. I'm so jealous.
She puts everything in folders and at the end, her goal at the end of the day is to have no unread email. I don't know how she does it. But my style is more, in terms of this emergency thing I was talking about earlier, I've trained myself to not ignore the email and not time block when I'm going to read email. I'll look at it. Mm-hmm. But just to ask that question, is it something I need to respond to now?
Yeah. Yes, is it urgent?
No. Is it okay. urgent? Okay. Is it really urgent,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I think that's if we just stop and take a look at what we're doing and how we're responding and reacting to certain things, that might help in terms of not overcommitting to too many goals.
So what are the most urgent emails? The sales deals?
Of course. Get back to me in the next 30 minutes if you want to close this deal would be something I would likely respond to very quickly.
As my dad says, time kills deals. Yeah. And he applies that to everything.
Well, you know what else? Not only time, but momentum. Like we hear True. That word a lot, like always get the next step and make sure that you have some other event. So I think keeping things in motion mm-hmm. are important, but you don't want to have so many balls in the air that you're gonna lose track of stuff yeah, and you're gonna definitely. Get overwhelmed. So pick your balls carefully. Spin your plates carefully.
Pick carefully. Now the next question is very specific and I was so happy to see this highlighted. Annette shared that getting the same training as her corporate coworkers is a challenge because she works remotely. She said that she's tried training using Skype, but she doesn't feel that Skype sessions are as effective for remote employees as the in-person training sessions are for the on-site employees. So, Charles, I thought this was such a great question. Since you have a lot of experience in this area, what are your thoughts here? How can Annette get the benefits of in-person training while working remotely so she can develop professionally?
Annette, I got to tell you, I love this question. This is really near and dear to my heart. But I also think before I respond, I'm going to say that we at CFS, you, Rebecca, and Elizabeth, and Ariana, and me, we do a lot of these sessions, and I think we've learned, because you know me, I mean, I'll confess right now that I used to hate doing webinars because I'm a up-close-and-personal type of a guy. Mm-hmm. I like to react and respond to people when they're in front of me. So what have we done? So this is, I think, something I'd like to pass on because we've seen it work. I think the number one issue with Skype and remote webinar sessions, training sessions, is there's a lot of silence, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of one-sided talking, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm the trainer, I'm chit-chatting away, and I ask a question and I get crickets, and that's the thing I hate the most, right? So I think one way to maintain engagement and for Annette in particular to get the most out of some of these remote training sessions is for the session to have built in feedback moments for feedback. So we recently learned here at CFS that doing a quiz was a great way to get engagement mm-hmm. and make the topic more interesting. So, and you know, you don't want to make the quiz too difficult. Multiple choice is always good. So we had PowerPoint. We'd ask a question. We'd give people four or five responses. We're looking for one. And so we would ask people to respond. And we found a lot of engagement. So number one, fun. Because mm-hmm. a lot of these webinars, if someone's just rambling on, if they're not fun. And they're torture for the listener. So I think how to make these more useful is to build in questions up front, ask people to participate and get feedback, and then have some sort of quiz gamification thing baked in. Yeah. So it makes it more interesting.
Yeah, that's great advice, Charles. And it sounds like since Annette is more on the business development side than the management side, you know, since she's not putting together these webinars per se, the only coaching that I could think to give you, Annette, is to say, go to your managers, go to management and ask them to, you know, just say, hey, what can we do? I'm feeling that these are not engaging. These trainings have not been engaging for me. I'm not really growing. I'm not really learning. Can you support me? Can you help me? Yeah. I mean, sometimes we have to ask for what we need, right?
Totally. You know, actually, I got another tip, and I've seen it done a couple of times, but now that I'm focused on it, I'm going to check it out more and see how it works for us. But that is, I think a lot of the reason we get crickets is because people are put on the spot and they don't know. Yeah. They haven't been given the time to think. They're on a webinar, and see a bunch of PowerPoint slides, and then all of a sudden the facilitator or the person leading the session says, oh, so what do you think? Give me feedback. Give me an answer. Here's a question. And you're like, so I think if you go to a webinar beforehand with some kind of prep, and maybe like you've done with me, you know, when we do a podcast, here are some of the questions we're going to ask. Here's some of the thoughts we'd like to express. Having a little bit of preparation for the participants.
Definitely.
We tend to worry about the facilitator being prepared. And you got a blank slate with the participants, but if they can come prepared with some ideas, they're more likely to share when someone says, so, does anyone have a question or an example? There's another way to keep people motivated.
Very good, good idea. That's actually something that we do in our webinar series, is we ask a survey question when people are signing up for that webinar, whatever the webinar may be that month, is what do you want to learn? Yeah. What do you want to get out of this? Because obviously the goal of doing a webinar on a particular topic is to frame it to your audience. I mean, we don't want to provide a webinar that is invaluable. That's the opposite of our goal, right? So if we have a particular topic and we say, all right, what do you want to get out of it? Then people go into it with that in their minds, and we're going into it saying, these are the questions I know I need to respond to, or this is the direction that I know I need to go. And it's really a helpful thing.
Yeah. And Annette, my last tip would be, because that's something, I think it's actually Ariana who brought it up recently. There are different types of applications that help make the learning stick. So like GoToTraining can I think while you're doing these sessions, you can poll people, ask questions online. So check that out, because that's another way for people to get more out of the session by participating.
Definitely. Awesome advice. All right. So let's get philosophical here. A few people mentioned that oftentimes it's just hard to get into the development mode. Daniela shared that her biggest struggle was getting out of her comfort zone and stepping up to the plate and accepting new challenges. She said it's a mental struggle more than anything else. How can we help Daniela solve for this?
That's a good one. Daniela, getting out of your comfort zone and stepping up to the plate. Let me think about that. Something that comes to mind actually is my daughter, Sophia. She went to college, and I would say it's fair for me to say, without upsetting or insulting her, you always got to be careful when dad makes these statements. I don't think I'm wrong in saying that she was fairly shy, and she would say, you know, she doesn't feel comfortable around a lot of people, particularly certain types of people. I don't know, you know, people, for some reason, she didn't like people, girls from Long Island. She kind of thought they were a little spoiled, and she had these preconceived notions, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And she did something that really impressed me, though, and it gets right to what Danielle is talking about. She put herself into a situation she knew she'd be uncomfortable in, but she knew that if she could get through it, it would be much better for her when she got to the other side, and that was, she joined a sorority.
Wow. Okay.
So she joined
the Long Island sorority.
It wasn't the Long Island sorority. That's really cool. Good comeback. No, it was, I don't remember. It's one of these Greek alpha, beta, phi, zeta, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. And she actually went in with a lot of reservations, but I would say very quickly, you know, maybe within a month or so, she became a star. And people started gravitating to her, and she started going to all these events, and she really joined the house and actually dormed there. And it was like amazing.
Wow.
And I think that really, number one, was a real testament to her willingness to be out of her comfort zone. I don't think you want to put yourself into a situation that's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're going to be damaged. But I think in this situation,
I'd hope you wouldn't be damaged.
No. So for Daniela, I would say, find something that is out of your comfort zone, do it anyway. And if you really want to take it seriously, like I know some people do this and take getting into an uncomfortable zone seriously, write down your thoughts, like journal, mm-hmm. like, you know, what's making you uncomfortable. And then if you get it out of your head and you can look at it because you wrote it down, you can either choose to make it something significant or let it go. I don't know. Something like that would be my thought.
Now, I'm going to call Daniela out just a little bit because I know her personally, and I know her from the motorcycle racetrack.
So talk about uncomfortable.
So when you said you got to get outside your comfort zone, it just made me laugh because it reminded me of how that is as far out of your comfort zone as you could possibly be if you're on the bike. Now,
yeah.
She doesn't ride. She just hangs out with us, but it's still that would be outside of your comfort zone.
I got another one for you. This is up close and personal on my discomfort. So many years ago when I started to do a lot of speaking engagements, and believe it or not, now I do a lot, and you wouldn't think I'm uncomfortable, but back in the day, I was really uncomfortable. So kind of like following Sophia's example, my daughter's example, I took a learning annex class, and it was stand-up comedy. It was a six-week class.
Wow. Okay.
And I knew going in that to graduate the class, you literally had to stand up in front of a live audience
now,
in a New York City cabaret theater. If you give me a second, I remember the address. I just don't remember the name of the place. It was 24th Street and 2nd Avenue. But it's like one of these Once Upon a Star.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm up there with professionals. Like I didn't even think.
Even know you did this.
Yeah, well.
Were your jokes good?
Probably not. But I just learned a lot about, I think the idea of doing something is a lot more terrifying than actually doing it and following through on something. And anyway, I don't think I've ever been in a situation that's gotten to that degree of discomfort. And that's why I did it. I'm thinking to myself, listen, if I can do this, no matter what I do from now on, it'll never come close to being as uncomfortable as
oh,
as
that's
this
so
thing.
Funny. Well, you know, that actually makes me think of an example. That's a professional development example that people can use. And that's when I first started in sales, I had a lot of nervousness around presentations. I could talk to people one-on-one and have conversations, no problem. But I was really anxious about giving presentations. And my boss actually was the one who said, you know what, you need to start going to networking groups because they force you to stand up and you have to say your commercial, you know, all that stuff. So he sends me off to this BNI group and I ended up joining it. And I joined it because of how uncomfortable I was, because I knew that it was going to be good practice. And anytime they were looking for people to do the, you know, how every week somebody gets spotlighted and does a presentation, I would say, sign me up. Anytime that you have a slot for a presenter, I don't care if I present three times in a year, sign me up for it because I knew I needed the practice. And every single time I'd get up there, nervous as hell. Oh my God, I got to present this. But by the end of the year, it was easy breezy. I was no longer afraid of public speaking. So it was just a really good comfort zone thing. So if you still feel a little bit, I don't want to say shy because I wasn't necessarily shy. It was that I wasn't confident. I didn't have the confidence I needed. They have, you know, networking groups. They also, what is it called?
Toastmasters. You read my mind. I was just about to jump in. So for Daniela, right, motorcycle champion, if you really want to overcome a discomfort with public speaking, that's actually a great place. I've been to those.
Yeah.
And it's – it's nurturing. There's a phrase we use in Vistage called carefrontational. So, you know, people will confront you with very honest feedback, but they do it in a caring, nurturing way. So again, you're not left with all the bad stuff and damaged as a result. So I think Toastmasters is a great suggestion.
It's so funny that you said the comedy thing, though, because I know Joe Applebaum, who we mentioned a little while ago, he told me a story about that too, where he did stand-up comedy for a little while. And that kind of, I think that a lot of speakers, especially people that want to go into speaking, it's just a great way to get in front of people and you're really pushed.
I'll tell you quickly, now that we're on the subject of stand-up comedy. So I'm in this club and there's us rookies, right? We're going up there, but I'm looking at people and I've seen them on TV. These are professionals.
Wow, no way.
And they're in there. And you know what they hate the most? What makes them the most uncomfortable?
No, what's that?
When they're following someone who's good.
Oh.
Like, I remember we're all sitting backstage waiting for our turn. There was a sequence and that had all been written out. And one guy was cursing because the person in front of him was good. It's like, I got to follow that.
Yeah.
So
that's hard.
It really just made me think. And actually, I got a lot of respect for these guys because it's almost like they force themselves night after night to be uncomfortable. And now that I'm thinking back about the course, that was actually one of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. When they were teaching us the prep for the stand-up routine, they said that in order for it to be funny, it has to be embarrassing and it has to be uncomfortable.
Okay.
And you have to keep those two things in mind. Yeah. And these guys are constantly on that edge. Mm-hmm. And if they I remember the instructor saying, if you lose that edge, that's probably when you're not going to be funny.
Now, that there's actually a big crossover to sales right here, I'm realizing.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And that's if you think about what that guy said, oh, man, he's all pissed off because he doesn't want to follow this person who's really good. Think about that from a sales context. I don't know if any of you listening have ever cold called and walked up to an office about to walk in and your competitor walks out right before you go in. That has happened to me. I can't even tell you how many times, or vice versa, where I'll be in there and I'm leaving and my competitor's coming in right behind me.
Yeah.
That's something that you have to keep in mind and that you know, is in the back of your mind that you are following other people in a sense, or they're following you. It goes one of two ways. So which way is it, right? Yeah. Are they following you or are you following them?
I think the parallels to sales are just amazing. I mean, it's just, you know, we used to interview, or we had interviewed top producers. Mm-hmm. And again, I love to remember certain parts of the things we do. And this one top producer, Lauren, I won't give her last name, but Lauren said something really profound. I knew her a little bit because we were working. She was a client. She was the top producer on the team. And when we were interviewing top performers, we were looking to isolate that X factor. Like, what makes you the top performer? And she kind of grappled with the question. Then she said something that I thought was really profound. I haven't forgotten it. And she said, you know, I feel that I have to maintain the butterflies in my stomach. And when I'm going to meet with a prospect, especially if it's a big deal, and if I go in going, I got this, this is easy, that's usually when I'm not getting the deal. I don't have my guard up. I'm not looking for the cues. I'm kind of like, I'm on autopilot, and that's bad for me. And she said she really channels that nervous energy. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying about the stand-up comedy. I think you can really use that. And even the thing that Daniela was talking about earlier on, you know, with channeling. Actually, it wasn't Daniela. It was someone else. I can't remember who it was who said it. But something about, you know, you being uncomfortable. Maybe it was Daniela.
Yeah, it was Daniela.
It was Daniela. Yeah, being uncomfortable and using that energy. Don't lose it is what I basically am saying.
Yeah. Awesome. And now we had two people specifically state that listening was their biggest challenge for personal development. And I think most of us can relate here. Billy wants to know how he can, quote, actually start listening instead of just seeming to. This is actually a pretty hard question for sales. I don't know. I mean, we spend a lot of time listening. But are we actually listening? You know what I mean?
Well, I like to say there's a difference between hearing and listening.
Yes,
right?
Sure.
So hearing is, I hear you speaking. I have no idea what you're talking about. That's listening. Listening is being able to actually understand where the other person's coming from. Great question, Billy. Let me think about it. Another, man, I'm taking all these lines from other people. Something someone else told me years ago again is to be interesting, be interested. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go into a conversation and you want to start improving your listening skills, be really interested in the other person. Something I've done and I work really hard on, it still happens to me, but I really work hard of it. I caught myself and I've been working on not being afraid when I've tuned out to call it. Mm-hmm. Like you'd be talking to me, Rebecca, and you'd be telling me a story or you'd be saying something. And for whatever reason, halfway through, I kind of tuned out. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing I can do, and I'm guessing this is the worst thing for others, is to go along with it, ignore it, and try to catch up. Mm-hmm. But the problem is if I do that, I'm probably so fixated on what it was that I missed that I'm not even listening to what it is you're saying to me. And at some point, I just feel I'm losing the entire thread and my listening went down the tubes. So I think it's important to just keep going back and not be afraid to ask dumb questions. Like, wait a minute, could you just repeat that? I didn't quite catch it.
Yeah.
Are you saying this? Are you saying that? No, I'm not saying this. I'm not saying that. Let me clarify. Oh, okay. So a little bit of that back and forth. What I'm basically saying is I'm still, by asking questions and asking you to kind of repeat something, demonstrating that I'm really interested in hearing what it is you have to say. Does that make sense?
Sure. I'd say another thing too is to ask questions that you actually want to know the answer to. That'll make it easier for you to listen. Right. Especially if you're in sales and you're in a new industry, let's say that you've crossed over from one industry to the other. I know that when I first started in insurance, I knew the restoration side of business of the industry that I was in, but I didn't understand how insurance worked and insurance policies and all that. And I actually learned everything that I ended up everything that I know now about insurance, I learned from my prospects because I would go to talk to them and I would say, you know, how does this work? Or I would just ask them specific questions. And of course, you got to go for the people that are going to give you the patience and the time to answer that question and be kind enough to train you essentially. But I think that that's a good way to allow another person to share all of their knowledge and they feel good because somebody's finally listening and actually gives a crap.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many insurance agents said, my clients don't even want to know. They don't want me to explain this policy to them or anything. And then of course, when they have problems, that's when they call and say, well, why didn't you tell me? And then they say, well, you weren't listening. You didn't want to know.
Yeah.
So to have someone go in there that actually is interested in hearing what they do on a day-to-day basis can make a difference. So it's, I think a lot of times thinking about what the other person sitting on the other side of the table would be, what is going to make them feel good.
Well, I think what I hear you saying, Rebecca, is it's almost like you're coming to the conversation listening for what can I learn?
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Like,
it's an education moment. What can I learn from this person?
Yeah.
We all, you know, we all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. So if you're talking to somebody that's in a different industry than you, ask questions.
Mm.
And I got to tell you, I mean, sometimes there was a lot of times I had no clue what they were talking about. They would say, wreck this and this and that. Use all these words. You don't know what it means. You just kind of shake your head and you listen.
Yeah.
And then after you hear it from different people over time, your knowledge will build. But, you know, it's just one of those things.
Well, you don't want to be afraid to also say, can you tell me what that means?
Sure.
I mean, I know that makes me sound
It depends
ignorant.
On the situation. But right. Yeah, a lot of times you can dig deeper and say, can you show me more, you know?
Yeah. Tell me more. I have no idea what you're saying.
Exactly.
No, I really like that. And I think back to your point about prospects teaching you, and I've said this a number of times, that what makes us subject matter experts is all the things our clients have taught us.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we get a new client, and we have big engagements a lot of the time where we're embedded with a client for 12 months, and we get to know them. We get to know their culture, their leadership style.
Definitely.
their industry, their systems, their processes, all of that. I just think it's a thrill when we get another client that, and we go into this knowing that we're going to come out of it having learned a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
It is. Yeah. It is. All right. So let's round this out. Of course, we're always talking about sales playbooks and continuing to develop those playbooks. Charles, do you have any tips for our listeners on how they might include personal development as a theme in their sales playbook?
I do. And Elizabeth, who works here at Criteria for Success and is primarily responsible for implementing sales playbooks with our clients, does a lot of this. So in the playbook, we use a wiki platform and have a space for forums. And forums is a very useful way to let people share what they're interested in from a personal development standpoint. Take me, for example. You know, I might share that I'm into scuba, and you might, someone else might share they're into knitting. We've seen a lot of book clubs in these forums, mm-hmm. and the book clubs would be either personal or they could be professional. Like, what are some of the great sales technique books that they've shared mm-hmm. and that they've read and then share them? So that's what I would recommend.
Okay. Okay, awesome. That's great advice. And the playbook is such a great place to go for that. So I love it. Thank you so much, Charles. This has been great. Thank you for all your awesome answers and for really thinking all this stuff through. I hope that our listeners found it helpful. Thanks for being here, Charles.
You're very welcome.
And for those listening, I hope you enjoyed today's session and found it valuable. And if you'd like any of the resources that were mentioned, we talked a little bit about time blocking. We talked about, obviously, personal development, setting goals, and a little tiny bit of head trash kind of themes and sales playbook. You can find any resources related to those things that I just mentioned there at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod43. And next week, we will be interviewing Mark Halpert. He's a LinkedIn expert. So be sure to tune in next week for our episode. All month, we have been writing about personal development on the CFS blog, but now we are crossing over into May, and May is LinkedIn month. So be sure to jump on criteriaforsuccess.com/blog and check out all our awesome new posts that are going to be coming out about LinkedIn and using it for sales. I also want to point listeners to our new Twitter page we just opened up. You can find us on Twitter at Let's Talk Sales with underscores in between the letters. So let's_talk_sales. And if you have sales questions you'd like answered for our next session, please submit your questions to us. You can do it on Twitter if you'd like and just use the hashtag AskCFS. Let's Talk Sales is a production of Criteria for Success and is produced by Rebecca Smith, Ariana Miskell, and Elizabeth Frederick. Happy selling and happy developing.